Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Well, it's a couple of weeks now that I've been back and feeling just more rested from my travels and settling into retreat. Of course, you all have been began the retreat a little over a month ago. But it feels, for me anyway, just to be able to and to have the retreat time and focusing on practice and study. Recollection, reflection. For me, it's very nourishing. The other day, or the other night, just dreaming, I don't know, sleeping, but dreaming of Ajahn Chah. I always find myself inspired, uplifted when I think of Ajahn Chah, particularly when it's, you know, in a time of practice and having that, having the mind turn to my teacher in a kind of natural way. So these last couple of days, been thinking of Ajahn Chah and just thinking a couple of the images that, because he was the a master at using imagery, similes, and thinking of the, when Ajahn Chah gave a teaching around just living with the cobra, of course, particularly when you've spent some time in tropical forests, and you really recognize. Okay, cobras are definitely dangerous, definitely. You pay attention. You don't get sloppy or heedless when you know that there's cobra around. And Ajahn Chah using that as an image to practicing Dhamma should be like living with a cobra, where you're really alert, attentive, present, and particularly present to the likes and dislikes in the mind, kind of the moods of happiness and sadness. You know, we tend to get swept up by them and carried away and lose our ground, lose our anchor. And naturally, we tend to drift toward the things that we like, and we try to run away from the things we dislike. We get kind of pleased with ourselves when we're happy. We think something's disastrously wrong if we're unhappy or sad. And Ajahn Chah saying, this is really. We treat that in the same way we treat a cobra. We just have to be very, very alert and attentive and present for both of those manifestations of the moods of the mind, or the opinions and views of the mind, because they both are, especially from a Dhamma practice perspective, they're both disastrous. Mm-hmm. Yeah, In the same way that if you're not alert and attentive when you're around a cobra, then it can get disastrous really quickly. So that to be paying attention to those tendencies of the mind. You know, we tend to follow our moods, get swept up by our particular views and opinions, as a Dhamma practitioner, we have to learn how to be really grounded in that watchfulness, wakefulness, not to be hooked by those moods, those swings of the perspective within the mind. It's not that we don't know that the cobra is there. We know very well it's there. In the same way that just knowing, okay, there's some kind of liking present, there's some kind of disliking present, but we don't need to react to it or get entangled with it or try to annihilate it, destroy it, or run after it. Just recognizing that's what's there, and come back to the watchfulness. And in the same way that cobras are used, if you just don't bother them and you're alert around them, then they just go ahead and do what cobras do, and they don't bother you. That's not problematic. Remember one time we had, for quite many months, this cobra decided to take up residence around the Dhamma hall at Wat Nanachat. It was months and months, and we had to be really careful when you went to the Dhamma hall. So you couldn't sort of just drift in. It made for a real alertness. So just these images are helpful sometimes because sometimes if you just you come up with a nice theory or a doctrine that you feel you should be following, but the image is really helpful to bring it home to the mind. Same way, another image that Ajahn Chah used, and of course this is similarly something that is a common sight in the countryside in the northeast of Thailand, or anywhere in Thailand really. There's just a fisherman throwing a net out and pulling the net in, drawing the net in, and the fisherman knowing that this time there's a big fish, and you can't get excited, and just try to pull it in real quick, because it's the fish will get startled and break away, but you can't be slack kind of lackadaisical about it, or the fish will just swim away. So that steadily and having a consistent effort and kind of pressure that one's drawing in the net for the fisherman. In the same way, that's how we have to practice. It's a steadiness, a consistency, an evenness in our practice that we need to be applying, so that just working with our defilements, working with our the hindrances, working with our obstacles, working with our greed, hatred, and delusion, and that just being steady, being consistent, being even, because it's the consistency of the practice that really has a deep effect on the mind, a liberating effect on the mind, you know, as opposed to some dazzling spurt of effort that we put out for a week or two or a month or two, and then let the practice slide for weeks and months at a time. It's that steadiness that's so important. They're learning how to be even in our practice. And of course, you know, the reality is within that evenness and that steadiness and that commitment to consistency, there's always some up and down to it. I mean, it's just natural. You know, but not to be having these real huge fluctuations in the practice, and in terms of practice, and because sometimes we need to be committed to, you know, being steady in the practice when sometimes we don't know what we're doing. Sometimes we don't feel that we're getting results, it's just having that commitment to being steady with the practice. And it's like Ajahn Chah saying, yeah, you're inspired and energetic. Yeah, so you practice. You're fed up and depressed, so you practice. It's just, you have to be consistent with it. Yeah, and that image of the fisherman being very steady with the throwing his net out, pulling it back in, drawing in the fish. I feel these images are helpful to get a feel for, you know, how do we approach the practice? What kind of effort do we put in? What kind of perspective? How do we hold our practice? So to be reminding ourselves of those kind of big picture aspects. But then, of course, you know, we need to make a choice or make a commitment to say a particular practice. In particular, now that we're in winter retreat, then, you know, really developing your formal meditation. Of course, I'm always plugging, putting a plug in for mindfulness of breathing. But for whatever meditation that you're doing, that you're comfortable with, that's working for you, then to make a commitment to that, to refine it or to clarify it, to solidify it. In terms of just using the, say, mindfulness of breathing as an example, starting right from your, of course this is, applies for everybody, start right from your posture. Pay attention to the physical posture. Say meditation is not just a mental exercise, it's a mind-body training. Training the whole body-mind complex, and posture is really an important piece. You're anchoring your meditation within the physical posture, and of course that applies to walking meditation, standing meditation, even when you're lying down, and using the posture as a bring awareness, bring attention to the physical body, so that when you're sitting, you pay attention to the sense of touch how you sit. Is there a sense of balance? Is there a sense of ease? Is there a sense of a kind of fullness of the body? So you're bringing attention to the whole body, and there does need to be an ease there. And the ease is not sloppy, heedless, slumping. That's not easeful, because that your body gets tired if you're kind of leaning or you're slumping and just sort of out of kilter. I remember going to Bill Bracewell, physiotherapist, and having me walk, and then having a video camera behind me, beside me, and then having a vertical axis, horizontal axis, and then there's, because I'm thinking, okay, I'm paying attention, I'm a mindful meditator. And you realize, and you look at, okay, there's this nice straight line up and down, vertical, nice straight line horizontal, and you look at shoulders, hips, that, wow. What feels straight is sometimes not at all straight. And you have to bring attention very carefully, because we get used to, in the same way, physically, our physical posture, we get used to and being out of balance. In the same way that we get used to, say, mentally, emotionally, out of balance greed, hate, and delusion. That's our reference point. So really, you have to pay attention and start with the posture. That sense of being upright, being balanced. Because that's you find that you can sit more comfortably and longer and with more internal ease when the body is balanced and relaxed. So pay attention to the posture. It's not a waste of time. It's absolutely necessary, because when our posture is out of balance, then it becomes, that's where pain, discomfort starts to kick in, and then it pulls the mind away from the meditation object. Whereas if there's a physical ease, a physical comfort, it's much easier to be present and consistent with staying with the meditation object. Yes, staying with the breath, taking the breath, and then taking an interest in the breath, so that we can allow the mind to come in. And the habit of the mind, of course, is to go out. And it goes out to its things that are around it in terms of sounds or different distractions. Internally, there's imagery, memories, and the mind goes out to that. So that having the breath there, the breath is always in the present moment, so that you've got a constant touchstone of being in the present. And yeah, become familiar with being in the present moment. And that familiarity with being in the present is, accomplished very directly with plugging into the breath. And really paying attention to, what is a long breath? What is a short breath? Where do we experience the breath most comfortably? Do we experience the breath most comfortably at the tip of the nose? Do we experience the breath most comfortably at the abdomen? Do we experience the breath more comfortably, say, in the chest area? Do we experience the breath more comfortably in a whole cycle of as it comes in, as it goes out, all the way, feeling the whole body sensation as the breath comes in, as it goes out? Be attentive to that. And how does that change? Because sometimes we start off with either the familiarity or the assumption, I should be paying attention at the, say, at the tip of the nose. Or that's what worked for me yesterday, that's what I should be doing today. But it changes. So pay attention to where is that comfortable breath. Ajahn Brahm uses an image or a phrase when he's teaching meditation, using the beautiful breath. That's really helpful. So how do we connect with the beautiful breath? How do we make the breath beautiful? You think, in and out, ho hum. When am I going to get samadhi? it's taking your attention, investing interest, investing a kind of a caring, paying attention to the breath. Let it become beautiful. Let it become comfortable. Let it become pleasant. Because sometimes we think meditation becomes such a task or a chore or a duty, but it's not out of bounds to. It's important to learn how to really enjoy it and enjoy the opportunity to just sit quietly, be with the body, be with the breath. And I found that after having been in Thailand where it was lots of people around, lots of things happening, lots of different teaching venues and whatnot, just to come back to Ubayagiri and the environment is so quiet and the forest is peaceful, and then just to have the time to sit with the breath. It's really delightful. So to give oneself that opportunity to enjoy the meditation, enjoy that process of the breath as something that's really nurturing and nourishing our well-being. And of course, it's doing that. Just the fact that you're breathing in, breathing out, you're existing and living, that is the nourishment. It's one of the nutriment of your feeding on the breath. But then directing attention to that sharpening of the attention, the sharpening of mindfulness, taking an object of attention, so that there's a point of reflection, and just that sense of connecting with the body, connecting with the process of the breath, but then letting the mind settle in on and absorb into the breath, or to allow the breath to stand out in a way that is really clear, and letting the mind, say the mind unify with the breath, because that's a unification of mind. Having a base or a foundation for that unification to happen. And the breath is such an immediate connection, in the sense that we're doing it all the time. We're breathing in, we're breathing out. We have that process and the sensation there. So just learning how to unify with that. Allow the mind to absorb into it. And not in a grasping way, but in a way that there's that interest and ease that is fostered. And then the mind starts to unify with the breath. And just letting everything else drop away. And that's where this practice of our meditation, of being alert, attentive, mindful, and then just letting things drop away, learning how to let go of things. I mean, the mind, it's just so easy for it to obsess with some kind of feeling of attraction or aversion, or like or dislike this. So seeing this, these. The cobra rears its head and those likes and dislikes, those feeling of pleasure or pain, the feeling of happiness or sadness. And it's just the cobra rearing its head and getting ready to strike. But recognizing that we have an anchor that we can be settling into. The sensation of the breath, the awareness of the breath, and the letting go, the relinquishing of those habits of mind, the relinquishing of the pull to the pull to the world. And when I say the world, it's not just some coarse material world. The world of our views and opinions is the world. The world of our obsessions and distractions. Is the world, and the kind of the righteous indignation that we have, or even the brilliant insight that we just had. We can obsess with that. We can get hooked with it. It's just as painful. So this willingness to let things fall away, to drop away, to fade away. Of course, that's the definition of dispassion, or one of the definitions. And it's this fading away, and letting that fade away, and then let the breath, let the meditation object stand out. Let the heart unify with it. And then there's a tremendous joy that comes from that. This quality of piti arises. And of course, then the ease and comfort of both the mind and body, the sukha that comes. And that's a manifestation of something that's possible in the practice, but it's also just something else to be seen, understood, relinquished, and let go of, letting it fade away. So then the mind becomes, the heart becomes steadier and clearer. And so then our practice is learning how to bring a foster that stability, that clarity, recognizing the opportunity of the mind to be still, And that sense of stillness. And not, it's not still because you're forcing it to be still. It's still because it's satisfied with being with the knowing. It's satisfied with not entangling itself with anything else. That's starting to incline to the Dhamma. That's where that sense of being steady and pulling it in, having consistency and evenness with our practice, the mind starts to become very stable, very firm. The heart becomes clearer. So that in this, during this retreat time, give yourself that opportunity to investigate, experiment. How does the meditation and the practice become more steady? How do I avoid getting in trouble with the cobra? How do I not get bitten by these different extremes and the swings of the mind? A lot of it is just you're realizing the sense of relief and satisfaction that comes from steadiness and clarity. And you realize, this is really where the Buddha's Dhamma manifests and arises. It's really where we can start to see those aspects of dukkha more clearly. Of course we get motivated to practice when we're suffering and miserable, but in terms of say, the liberating quality of the Buddha's teachings, it's when the heart is really still and steady that you really say, oh, that's what suffering is. That's what dukkha is. That's how that works. Then we get a handle on it. It's really starting to see, that's that inconstancy of the mind. That uncertain nature of them, a phenomena. Anicca starts to really become more clear. And this, we have to turn the mind to investigate it, to reflect on it. It's like presenting the possibility of liberation to the heart. And it's when there's a stillness there, you realize, that's what the heart is really. That's what it's seeking. There's a phrase I can't remember where. It's one of the early suttas in the Majjhima Nikaya. The Buddha pointing to the inclination of the mind, that sort of unshakable deliverance, so the sure heart's release. That's what the heart is really craving in a wholesome way, in a positive way. It's what was really satisfying to the human heart. So that to give attention to that, allow the heart to become steady and clear. And choice is obvious here. To offer that for reflection this evening.